This call is being recorded.
Hi, this is John Richardson speaking with you from Toronto, Canada. Today is Tuesday, May the 12th, 2020, and this is one more of my ongoing series of podcasts describing tax issues affecting Americans abroad. Americans abroad don't live in the United States, so largely they're discriminated against because of where they are. But there's another group that seems to be subject to a great deal of discrimination based not on where they are, but where they're from, and that is undocumented immigrants in the United States. And on that note, I am pleased to be joined today by two fantastic guests in no particular order, beginning with Professor Francine Lipman, who is a tax law professor at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, who has written a tremendous amount on this issue. In fact, I absolutely encourage everybody to read this paper in particular. It's called The Illegal Tax, Professor Francine Lipman, and it talks about how the U.S. tax system discriminates against undocumented immigrants, actually subjecting them to a higher rate of taxation, incredibly, than U.S. citizens and green card holders living in the United States. In a general sense, you will find all of her scholarship, which is truly amazing and motivational, at SNRN. If you just do a web search there, perhaps she can give us a little more information specifically. I'm also joined by Laura Snyder, who is in Paris, France, who's been on a number of podcasts with me before and continues to be a tremendous advocate, educator, and great catalyst towards getting change in the tax system for Americans abroad. So thank you both for participating with me today.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, John.
I'd like to begin with Francine. Now, Laura has also written a paper that has not yet been published on this particular topic, which is amazing. And as I describe my feelings about Professor Lipman's paper, I think you can assume that I feel the same way about Laura's paper. But we're talking here about the way the U.S. tax system discriminates against people based on placism, based on where they're from, or where they have gone to. So let's begin with Professor Lipman, with Francine, and I wonder if in a general way you would kind of take us through how the U.S. tax system treats undocumented immigrants differently from the way that it treats U.S. citizens, green card holders, or any other kind of U.S. resident.
Well, thank you. What's interesting about this conversation, and I appreciate John putting me in touch with Laura, because while tax law professors are critical thinkers, we're trained to think critically about different institutions, it is always eye-opening and mind-opening to think about things that you've thought about for a long time in a different way. And frankly, that's how progress is made. And so unauthorized immigrants, and I'm going to use the term unauthorized rather than undocumented. And the reason I'm using that term is because the intersection of tax truly intersects with pretty much everything we do in life to some extent, and that's why we need to talk about it constantly and try to reform it in a way that empowers life rather than destroys it. And the intersection of tax and immigration law is fascinating and very complicated. And so I have the pleasure of working with a lot of immigration lawyers, and what they say to me is that these individuals have documents, and I've seen that in my work. They have documents. They just don't have the documents that authorize them to work in the United States, or in some cases, to be physically present. And so what the U.S. tax system does, the U.S. tax system, is its goal is to accumulate resources for the federal fisc. And so it is, and from their perspective, they're not discriminating, because what they say is, we're don't ask, don't tell. If you are physically present, so there's placism, if you're physically present in the United States for more than 163 days, and it's not, because it's taxed, it's not that simple. It's not just the year, but there's a two-year look back, and we count days, and of course they weight days differently for the look back period. But in any case, if you're physically present for more than 163 days, then you are subject to tax on your worldwide income, including if you file jointly with a spouse who maybe isn't even here, that spouse would be subject to tax on their worldwide income. And so that's similar to a U.S. citizen or a green card holder. However, here's where the discrimination comes in. Yes, we're going to tax you on your worldwide income. However, because you don't have a Social Security number that authorizes work, we are not going to allow you to avail yourself of a myriad of different benefits, including the most recent COVID-19 stimulus check. So therefore, as John said, unauthorized immigrants end up paying taxes at a higher effective rate because they don't get the earned income tax credit, they don't get the child tax credit, they don't get the COVID-19 rebate recovery payment. And so they actually pay taxes at a higher effective tax rate. And what's even more oppressive is they're paying into Social Security and Medicare at the same effective rate we pay in with no benefits. So they don't qualify for Medicare, even though they've maybe paid in for 30, 40 years, or Social Security.
So they're paying, basically, they're required to pay this because they're U.S. tax residents, but they don't get the benefits afforded to other U.S. tax residents. That pretty
exactly
much summarizes
it. Exactly right. Yep. Okay. So we want to tax them broadly, literally on their worldwide income, because they're physically here. They've placed themselves here, to use Laura's term. So we're going to tax them broadly. However, we're not going to give them any benefits because we have created an immigration system that is broken.
And also, I might add that if they're being taxed on their worldwide income, that would include income that they may earn from any asset or in any way, shape, or form from their country of origin, correct?
Absolutely.
So it's so far worse than just taxing them on U.S. source income.
Yes. Yeah, they're taxed on worldwide income, just like U.S. citizens are taxed on worldwide income, regardless of where they are physically present.
But yet they're denied the benefits that most citizens have, or green card holders have, or legal residents have. Now, can I ask you
Absolutely.
This? You know, I'm thinking about this this discussion with you today. I was on Quora over the weekend, and I find all kinds of discussion. You know, people saying, oh, they're illegal immigrants. They're undocumented. You know, of course they don't deserve this. Of course they don't deserve that. Why is it that, or some of the comments were saying, oh, they don't even pay taxes. Now, your point is, and I agree with you completely, that not only do they pay taxes, but they pay more taxes, generally at a higher effective rate, than U.S. residents in the country, correct?
Absolutely. And in fact, the good news is that there is empirical evidence that undocumented immigrants pay literally tens of billions of dollars in taxes every year. And in fact, the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy, which has a great website, they've monetized this. And to state and local governments, undocumented, unauthorized immigrants pay about $12 billion, with a B, dollars every single year. And that's pretty obvious if you think about it. Sales tax, gas tax, excise taxes, in-state and local income taxes. You don't get a pass if you're undocumented. And by the way, many undocumented unauthorized immigrants are working for bricks and mortar companies, and so therefore all of this is withheld from their paycheck, just like you and me. So this is, and if they're chilled from filing, because many people say, well, they don't file. Well, that simply isn't true. But if they're chilled from filing, they end up overpaying because they don't get their tax refunds. So in addition to $12 billion a year in state and local taxes, the Social Security Administration has documented that on an annual basis, unauthorized immigrants pay another $12 billion a year into Social Security and Medicare without a chance of collecting on that. They are not allowed to collect on that. And there's folks might suggest there's fraud, but there's very little fraud at all in this area because the check and balance is so easy. And then in addition to Social Security and Medicare and state and local taxes, undocumented immigrants pay tens of billions in dollars in federal income taxes like we do every single year. And as John has said, they pay, the demographic of unauthorized immigrants is such that they're lower income. Why? Of course, because they have to work in a kind of a stealth manner because they don't have social security numbers that authorize work. So necessarily they tend to be in jobs that are lower income, and painfully during this period of time, many of them, and I've actually been an expert witness on a case that was in Greeley, Colorado, where there was a chicken processing plant where many unauthorized immigrants work. So these COVID-19 meatpacking plants, many of those individuals are unauthorized workers, and that, so it's not a coincidence people don't seem to be concerned about their health care. So this is a huge issue, and you're exactly right. They pay at a higher effective tax rate than similarly situated U.S. citizens, and folks who say they're not paying taxes are simply wrong.
How can the general public be so indescribably ignorant? I mean, what leads to this? I find it astounding. I mean, nobody could dispute, you know, the description that you've just given us.
Because there is a lot of racism, frankly. It kind of comes down to that. The unauthorized immigrants that are most significantly discriminated against are brown and black individuals. And we don't have a race problem in the United States. We have a racism problem. And, you know, I think that there's nothing more telling than just denying facts. Simply put, when you go into any retail store back before COVID-19 and you purchase something, of course, everyone has to pay state and local sales tax. So when you go to a gas pump, You don't say, well, I'm unauthorized, I don't have to pay this. So we have blanket tax systems that affect everybody who's here.
Yeah, no question about that. I'm wondering if, to some extent, you can say, well, I mean, how can the general public be so ignorant? Well, I think one answer is because they want to be, because there is so much racism, right? Okay, but I think another answer that I've come to see is the sheer complexity of the U.S. tax system, plus the propensity of the United States to deliver benefits through that tax system, makes it very, very easy to disguise what's really going on from large, large numbers of people. In fact, almost everybody. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I would. And I would say that, in fact, we even call it, I've written about this in other capacities, a stealth tax. So there's no clarity. I think you're absolutely right that there's an intentional opaqueness to that, and part of it is complexity that people want. Everyone wants to fix problems through the tax code, and if you just keep mounting things on it, it just becomes overwhelming. And so you're right. Congress wants to fix things, but they don't want to fund the IRS. And so it really does exacerbate the complexity.
Well, the U.S. tax code, and not just the U.S., I think Canada as well, to a lesser but still significant extent, reminds me of a website that was built in 1995 that's never been redone. They just, add a page here, subtract a word there. And, I find it completely incomprehensible. But there is no doubt, there is absolutely no doubt that there is a segment of U.S. tax residents subject to worldwide taxation in the United States who are discriminated against based on where they're from. You would agree with that?
Absolutely. And actually, Bob, I wrote another paper where I quoted Bob Dole. Remember Bob? Good old Bob Dole.
Good old Bob, yeah.
He was complaining about the complexity of the federal income tax system. And I thought his analogy really resonated. He said, if you were treating a patient, if a doctor was treating a patient, you don't just add drugs on top of drugs on top of drugs. You wait to see if the drug works, and if it doesn't, you remove that drug. Well, with the tax system, we just keep adding layers upon layers upon layers, and we really don't, as you said, we don't edit it. We just try to add fixes on top of fixes, and it just become unwieldy.
No question. All right. So Francine has described for us a truly deplorable situation where the U.S. tax code discriminates based on where people are from. And now I'd like to bring Laura into the conversation, and I'd like for Laura to explain to us a little bit how the U.S. tax system discriminates against people, not based on where they're from, but where they go. Laura, your thoughts on that?
Well, John, I'm going to get this started, and you're going to pick up on it because you're definitely the expert in this area. But I think you can talk about multiple areas where there's discrimination. And on the surface, you'd think there wasn't, right? Because you would say, well, the U.S. tax code taxes U.S. citizens the same way, regardless of where they live in the world. So Where's the inequality? Where's
exactly. The Internal Revenue Code and its majestic equality prohibits both the rich and the poor from sleeping on the park bench, right?
Exactly right. And as you have pointed out, John, but is obvious, I suppose, to everyone listening, it's only the poor person who needs the park bench. So an answer you'll also get back is, well, there's the foreign earned income exclusion and there's the foreign tax credit. And so that solves all of your problems. So what are you complaining about?
Purely a myth.
And yes, on many levels, it's a myth. So let me give you an example, for example, about the foreign earned income exclusion. First of all, it only applies to earned income. The longer you live overseas, the more likely it is you're going to have unearned income. For example, you're going to have maybe a pension. You're going to have maybe an unemployment benefit or a maternity leave benefit or a disability benefit, or you're going to have capital gains. And so none of those things qualify as foreign earned income under the foreign earned income exclusion, or at best they might, and you don't know. And so you have to pay a professional a lot of money to try and make a determination. And they'll probably tell you to be safe, it's best to, you know, say it doesn't qualify and go ahead and pay the tax on it. You'll also to give you an example with the foreign tax credit, you know, a lot of countries will purposely not tax a certain kind of income or not tax a certain kind of income at a period of in someone's life, like when they become a widow or when they're unemployed or disabled. And that the country will make a policy decision to not tax certain types of income because they want that resident and possibly also citizen of their country to have that money. Well, the United States then would come along and say, well, since you didn't pay tax in the place where you live on that income, we're going to tax that money. Thank you very much. So what you see is Americans who live overseas, for any type of income they have, basically paying the highest tax rate that applies, be it in the place where they live or in the United States. So those are just a couple of examples.
Yeah, I'll just add a couple. I mean, for a non-expert, I thought that was pretty good, Laura. Okay, but, you know, just to round this out a little bit, I mean, Laura's explained, I think, very, very well why things like the foreign earned income exclusion, the foreign tax credit rules do not mean there's no double taxation. But what I would like to add is the fact that under the Internal Revenue Code, anything that is foreign to the United States is subject to very, very punitive taxation. So, for example, you know, even the benign act of buying a non-U.S. mutual fund is treated as a sacred instrument of tax evasion by the U.S. Or setting up a small business corporation in the form of a corporation, a one-person ma-and-pa shop set up as a small business corporation in Canada is treated as, well, a sacred instrument of tax evasion and or deferral by the United States. I mean, there are provisions in the Internal Revenue Code that even impose an excise tax on an American abroad who has the temerity to buy, a homeowner's insurance policy in the country they live in. Wrong. No. You should be going back to the homeland to buy your home insurance. You know, the fact that any American who leaves the United States is on a leash, which is, you know, effectively the U.S. dollar, their whole life has to be sort of nominated in U.S. dollars, which means they can actually be in a position where they're subject to tax just because of exchange rates where they've never made a cent. Another horrible example, or lately, and my favorites, I guess that Congress finally figured out that things like, you know, the foreign tax credit rules and that were depriving U.S. Treasury of some revenue. Of course, you pay foreign tax credits you use when somebody has a foreign tax to pay. So what Congress has now perfected is the creation of what I would call fake income. In other words, they make up income where the U.S. taxpayer abroad has never even received it, precisely because it cuts the source country out of the thing. Examples would be the recent transition tax, which in my view is nothing but the confiscation of retirement assets of Americans abroad, the new GILTI provisions, the exit tax if they try to renounce U.S. citizenship, even foreign pensions, unless there's a treaty carve-out, are a huge problem. So make no mistake about it. Bottom line, the United States of America is imposing a separate and more punitive taxation aimed at those Americans who leave the United States to live elsewhere. They are punished because of where they went in the same way that immigrants to the United States who don't have, well, they're not immigrants. People who come to the United States without a legal status are also punished based on the notion of place. So this is a huge problem here. Laura, why do you think it's so hard to get this point across to politicians? Why do they not understand? Is it willful blindness? Is it that the tax code is too complex? Is it requires energy to learn it? Or is it a subtle sense that, my God, you must be some kind of traitor if you move from the United States? What do you think?
Well, definitely the latter, although certainly the first things that you said are certainly the case, too. I'll tell you what I found really striking when I looked at Francine's work. She talks about how many people in the United States are convinced and talk about how immigrants don't pay taxes. Immigrants to the United States don't pay taxes, or the undocumented, unauthorized immigrants don't pay taxes. And that struck me because, in fact, that's the same thing that people say about immigrants with an E from the United States, Americans who leave the country, who live overseas, U.S. citizens who live overseas for whatever reason. And there's just as much prejudice against those people and scapegoating of those people as people who don't pay taxes. And you can go back to 1864, Senator Jacob Collamer. If a man draws his income from our public debt, from property here, and resides in Paris, skulking away from contributing his personal support to the government, in this day of its extremity, he ought to pay a higher income tax.
And they do.
And they do. And there's 1894, so about 30 years later, Senator George Hoar. There are a great many people, I am sorry to say, who go abroad for the very purpose of escaping the obligations of U.S. citizenship. They lived in luxury at the same time that less cost in a foreign capital. They had none of the voluntary obligations which rest upon citizens of charity or contributions or supporting churches. And you can go to, you can go to as recently as 2019, when, Senator Bernie Sanders, when Silicon Valley billionaires run abroad, they go to Bermuda to avoid paying their fair share of taxes. What patriotism, what love of country. He's actually said that several times. And I think there's this idea that, conscious or unconscious, that if someone leaves the United States, if a U.S. citizen, by their own choice, does not live in the United States, they can only have one reason for doing that, and that's to avoid paying U.S. taxes. There can't be another legitimate reason why they wouldn't live in the United States, because, why would you not want to live in the greatest country in the world? So that can only be that you're trying to avoid paying U.S. taxes.
Well,
it doesn't occur to them. Yeah, go ahead.
One other example that comes into my mind at this moment is, we've discussed before the incredibly punitive U.S. tax treatment when a U.S. citizen marries a non-citizen, right? We've talked about this before. I mean, it's as though the Internal Revenue Code is premised on the assumption that marriage to a non-citizen is yet another form of tax evasion.
There's a lot of problems with that, with, of course, marrying a foreign citizen, living overseas with them, makes it, you would not want to file jointly with your spouse, because why would you? Because they don't live in the U.S. and their income has nothing to do with the U.S., so why should they file?
But well, once if you don't like them, you might. If you wanted to abuse them, you might.
But that forces the married U.S. citizen living overseas to use the status married file separately, unless they can use head of household for whatever reason.
Right. Actually, let me pause you there. To go back to something that Francine said, all right, to be forced to use the married filing separately status is another form of discrimination and a stealth tax on Americans abroad. In the same way that Francine's paper talks about stealth taxes on undocumented immigrants, right?
Absolutely.
So, we're in a situation where it looks like the Internal Revenue Code hates two kinds of people, those who come to America and those who leave America.
That's clear. What I just found really fascinating in the parallels between, you know, Francine's work and the research I did was this knee jerk, I don't know how conscious it is, but this knee jerk feeling that, oh, well, they come from another country and they live here. They don't pay taxes. Oh, they go to another country. They don't live here. They don't pay taxes. In either case, these people are trying to milk the system by not paying taxes, which in neither case is the case. Francine has explained, you know, very well how that's not the case. And I think that with respect to Americans who live overseas, I think there's I don't understand where it comes from, but a complete lack of recognition that actually when you live in another country, you actually do have to pay taxes there like everybody else who lives in that country. So,
are you sure? You know, I didn't know that.
I'm pretty sure that if
France has taxes?
France has taxes. And I can tell you, if I wasn't filing a tax, you know, making my tax declarations in France, I would not be talking to you right now. I'd be sitting in a jail cell somewhere, I assure you.
I think that America is a tax-obsessed culture. You know, it's interesting because so much of the, you know, the mythology of America, right, is that it was founded as a, you know, as sort of a tax-resistant movement, right? But if anything, it seems to me that American culture is the opposite. It's a culture of tax obsession. And you know, punishing people through the tax system or, you know, delivering benefits through the tax system. I mean, I find it fascinating, for example, well, you know, as you know, I live in Canada, and the way Canada is delivering its COVID-19 benefits is simply, well, here, you know, here's a form you fill out, blah, blah, blah. They will be taxable. Okay, in other words, you'll have to declare the benefits on your tax return. But it's not delivered specifically through the apparatus of the Canadian tax system. And there, you know, there's no reason it has to be done that way, but the U.S. knee-jerk reaction to benefits somehow seems to be deliver them, you know, through the tax system or some kind of, you know, pre-existing regulatory apparatus, which clearly just compounds the problems. I mean, of all the stuff written on these COVID-19 benefits, I mean, if you just hunt around online, you'll see that there is still incredible confusion. Nobody understands what they're entitled to or what they're not entitled to. It's amazing to me, you know, except in the clearest of cases.
Well, there actually is a reason that the current Senate is pushing things through the income tax system. And it really did explode in our face with COVID-19. And if you look at the original bill for the economic impact payment that the Senate was proposing, and for many benefits that are pushed through the income tax system, they rely on work. So you do not get the COVID, the original design of the COVID-19 payment by the Senate, by the Republican majority Senate, was that you only got it if you worked. So we have this very Puritan work ethic in America. You are only deserving if you work. And so where do we measure work? On your annual income tax return. And so the Republicans designed this originally that only the workers got it, the workers who were paying income taxes. The House majority Democrats were able to push that out and say, hey, the people who need it are going to be the people who aren't working. That's why they keep pushing against a payroll tax holiday. If you're not working, you need this benefit. And if you're not working, you're not paying payroll taxes. And so the House was able to resist and persist. And as a result, though, we have this tail wagging the dog because we have a benefit, the economic impact payment, that doesn't depend on work. but yet they're delivering it through the income tax system. And it's created a tsunami of problems because there are tens of millions of people who don't have to file tax returns. So we were saying, well, how are they going to get this benefit since it's delivered through the tax system? And so the IRS is having to work with the Social Security Administration, the and other social benefit programs. And there are millions of homeless individuals who won't get it because they don't have access to computers and the software and tax filing. They don't have addresses. They don't bank. And so America has this obsession with work and with and that's why we try to deliver benefits through the income tax system. But what's so and you're both absolutely spot on with this sense that you are not a patriot if you leave the country and if you're residing someplace else. And so there's this backlash. And how do we backlash? We backlash through the income tax system. And one great example of that is that many benefits that are delivered through the tax system require a Social Security number that authorizes work. Well, interestingly, the last economic benefit from the Great Recession in 2008, that was a making work pay credit, it came out that many members of the armed services, so I call them Private Ryans, many of the Private Ryans, and of course women as well, were not getting the making work pay benefit because they were married to someone who was not authorized to work, who didn't have a Social Security number. And so many members of Congress came together and added a carve out that if one of the members, so it's an acknowledgement of this broken system and a system that doesn't work. And if one of the couple, one of the married couple is a member of the armed services, only one of them needs a Social Security number to get the economic impact payment. And so we have this weird juxtaposition of saying, hey, you're not deserving if you don't have a Social Security number that doesn't authorize work, but yet members of the armed services are, of course, the ultimate patriots. So it's very fascinating, the psychology and this obsession with work in the United States and patriotism, tying that to patriotism.
You know, it's also interesting to me that it seems to me that this assumes a very narrow definition of work that means remunerative work only. So, for example, somebody who stays home to raise children, is that not work?
Yeah, absolutely. You're right.
It is really, really problematic. You know, this tying everything, to the tax system, the way the United States does it. It's amazing. Yeah. But go ahead.
Canada is a great example. So, for example, the highest, the group of Americans with the highest rate of poverty are children between 0 and 5. The youngest children in this country have the highest rate of poverty. And of course, they are the most, at that age group, your body, your mind, everything is developing. So housing and food insecurity is developmental, can destroy a body and a mind. So it's critical to get resources into that demographic. Well, how does the U.S. deliver it? Basically through the income tax system. And so the parents have to be working. But in Canada is a great example of they have child allowances that are not, that have nothing to do with work.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that, you know, that is fascinating. And that I think is deserving of a paper, a blog post or something, because I had never seen it through that perspective, but that is a tremendous insight. Oh my God, so many problems with this whole thing. It's incredible. I think that we ought to do another one of these. I think this has been great. And I'd actually like to close with...
John, could I, before you close, could I make one reflection?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
We've been talking about how the way that Americans overseas are taxed is a way of keeping... it's its own form of a wall around the country in keeping Americans in the United States, not allowing them to leave.
Americans are not free to leave the United States anymore. They've turned the country into a prison. There's no question. I mean, homelanders don't know this because, you know, they just live in it. But there's no doubt, objectively, it's a fiscal prison. Yeah.
The fiscal policies. Yes. Well, so as I learn more about Francine's work and I listen to Francine, I see an immediate carryover of that analogy to immigrants coming to the United States, that the tax code is a way, another way of keeping them out. It's its own form of a wall of keeping immigrants out fully integrating into the country and living a full life as a resident of the United States. I just wanted to kind of make that reflection. Is it something that occurred to me as I was listening to friends?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And in fact, it is, as both of you have indicated, the federal government is kind of obsessed with taxation or a form of using fiscal policy to discriminate against different individuals. And I described this, it's a fee. It's an immigration fee for these individuals to be here who, for some, we don't want them here. They're not the type of people, they're not the deserving immigrants. And so we impose a fee, a price to them. Same thing with people, American citizens moving offshore. We don't want you to do that, so we're going to impose a fee. But what is the juxtaposition of taxation of corporations? See, corporations, of course, are privileged, and they don't face the same discriminatory taxation. And so it's fascinating that the workers are the one who are taxed. Labor is taxed excessively, but yet the corporate system is really not. And in fact, in the Tax Cut and Jobs Act that was passed in 2017, corporations received a $1.5 trillion tax cut. And that was, you know, regardless of pretty much where the corporation is doing business. So it's really, we tax labor, we tax individuals, undeserving or deserving, but corporations are treated differently because it's a capitalist perspective.
Well, it's much more than that. You know, of course, corporations have preferential tax treatment. By the way, Laura was mentioning the foreign earned income exclusion as a benefit for Americans abroad. They can exclude up to a certain amount of earned income. But what's interesting, I just did a blog post on this. The motivation for the foreign earned income exclusion had nothing to do with the individual and everything to do with making U.S. citizens abroad less costly from a tax perspective for U.S. corporations.
Exactly.
So that's another example. And I think another example that I find interesting is, you know, we go back to Warren Buffett, you know, my secretary's taxed at a higher rate than I am. Now, why in the world, what is the rationale in a tax system for, giving investment income preferential tax rates? In other words, what is the rationale in a comparative sense for taxing work in a more punitive way than taxing investment income. I think that's a tough sell. And by the way, I'm a conservative, you know, for the record, and then I think that, that speaks volumes about the insanity of this kind of thing. You know, that even a conservative like me sees this stuff as, wrong, immoral, irrational. Laura, I'd mentioned some of Francine's writings. I'd like you to mention some of your incredible work, your surveys, that sort of stuff.
Oh, well, thank you. In October, you kindly arranged, John, for me to have published on the Tax Connections website the survey that I did of 602 either current or former U.S. citizens living overseas. And the survey was fairly detailed about asking about their experiences with U.S. taxation and banking policies, FATCA in particular. When you post the link to this, maybe I could include a link to the
absolutely,
to the
survey. Yeah,
and links to Francine's work too, I think.
Yeah, links to everybody's work. By that I mean the links to the two of your work will definitely be posted. It's fantastic stuff.
And I also have a conference paper online that talks about the survey, so I can share that too.
Definitely, that would be fantastic. Okay, so. One of the reasons I want to bring this to an end is to leave something to talk about for a follow-up. Down the road, I think this has been so interesting. And I really, really want to say how privileged I am just as a human being to share this last 45 minutes or so with the two of you. I mean, I think that you're two amazing people, amazingly motivational. And, it's like after I talked to Laura, today after talking to Francine, I mean, it gives me sense that there is hope, to get these things changed. So thank you very, very much. But let me, in the spirit of inspiration, motivation, and I guess a reflection of the perspiration that Francine obviously experiences in her work, let me just read a quote from the beginning of her article. Almost 50 years ago in 1965, on the steps of the state capitol in Montgomery, Alabama, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. asked a crowd of 25,000, "How long will prejudice blind the visions of men, darken their understanding, and drive bright-eyed wisdom from her sacred throne?" The crowd, celebrating the completion of the 5-day, 50-mile march from Selma to Montgomery and their First Amendment rights, encouraged Dr. King to speak, and he did, answering his own question with poetry, faith, and optimism. How long? Not long. Because the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. Following the many lessons of Dr. King's passive resistance legacy, this article, meaning Francine's article, confronts insidious vilification and errant racism with facts, laws, and data, and I highly recommend the article to you. Thank you so, so much for participating with me today.
Thank you, John. Thank you for bringing our work together. I think the confluence and the juxtaposition of the two ideas really create a synergy that is going to have me thinking for a while. So I appreciate that.
Well, I that's fantastic because I certainly share that view. And as I said before, it seems to me that placism is real in America, and what's happening is that with the undocumented immigrants, they're being discriminated based on where they're from. In the case of Americans abroad, they're being discriminated based on where they go, and either way, it's based on place. Thanks very much.
Thank you, John.